Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
America today feels more divided than ever. From the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic to the heated debate surrounding the 2020 presidential election, the country has been wrestling with some of the most controversial issues of our time. And Chairman Biden and Dr. Fauci's monster, Ronald Alfred Weitzman, takes a direct and unfiltered look at seven of the most contentious topics shaping the national debate today. The goal isn't simply to stir controversy, but to challenge readers to question the narratives they hear and to examine the issues from a different perspective. Ronald was 93 when he wrote this book. He received his BA and MA from Stanford, PhD from Princeton. In addition, he served on university faculties in the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel. His specialty areas are mental testing and survey statistics, and he has dozens of publications and three patents in those fields. He's a U.S. Army veteran. On This Week in America, we'll discuss the issues at the center of the debate and why Ronald believes open discussion is more important now than ever. The author of Chairman Biden and Dr. Fauci's Monster, A Deep Dive into Our Political Divide, Ronald Alfred Weitzman, our guest on This Week in America. Doctor, it's a pleasure to have you with us on the program today. I need to ask, why in your 90s did you decide to write your first book? What inspired you to take a bold look at current issues like you have?
Well, the first place, this is my first book, but it doesn't mean I haven't been writing. As a professor, I have written dozens of articles, so I've written, but this is my first book. And the reason is that, I was writing to my professional community, and I wasn't writing to the whole world, and I never thought of doing that until, I got older and I wasn't employed anymore. I was retired and got more involved in everything, in the local community affairs, and even had more time to pay attention to national and international affairs. And so that's part of the reason. But the other reason was, I was a Democrat until I was 86 years old, and I could not vote for Hillary Clinton at that time because, as a psychologist, I saw her as a psychopathic liar. And I knew that, and, I've worked. When I was in the military service, I worked with sociopaths, so I had quite a bit of experience with that kind of thing. So I could not vote for her. And, I had doubts about Trump, as most people did, because he hadn't been in politics before. I'd seen him on television, and that's the only way I really knew him. But my wife was a lifelong Republican, and she suggested I start listening to Hannity again, which we had done when he had started out with a Democrat on the same program. But when the Democrat left, I left too. So I went back to listening to Hannity, and I liked what he said. I liked his candor, and I thought, well, I can vote for Trump because at least he can't be bought. He doesn't need money the way many other politicians, too many do, and use their political positions to help make money. And I think that's what Biden did, and I think that's what Hillary did. So I voted for him, and then I saw that he actually was doing when he became president, he actually was carrying out the things that he said he was going to do. So I really got to like him. And, then I saw what he was under, what he was going through by the Democrats. And not only did I leave the Democratic Party, I didn't become a Republican. I became an independent, but I did leave the Democratic Party, and I was became glad that I did, because to my point of view, and I started to listen to Mark Levin and Levin, and I began to see that and see by myself that the Democratic party was really moving hard to the left and seemed to be moving without any brakes. So I really got concerned, and I got more involved in the issues, and that led me to write the book. And one of the reasons was after the 2020 election, I really wanted Trump to run again, and I wrote the book to help persuade him, be one of the voices working in that direction. And when he became elected, I really, you know, the book was already written. I had predicted he'd win in a landslide in an interview I had with Logan Crawford, and he certainly did. Now, I'm glad he did.
Our guest on the program is Ronald Alfred Weitzman. The name of the book is Chairman Biden and Dr. Fauci's Monster. His website is his name, R.A. Weitzman, WEITZMAN.net. The link's on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, tackling seven contentious issues, issues that are dividing the country. Let's talk about a couple of those as we have time on the conversation today. In Chapter 4, it deals with sex and gender. What is the difference between sex and gender?
Well, I have a whole chapter on it, but very briefly, sex is physical and gender is mental. And, you know, we're not clear about the difference when we live in this world, but the physicists and the scientists deal with the physical world, and the psychologists try to understand what's going on in our minds by what's current now, what we call behaviorism, which tries to determine from our behavior what's in our minds, or from what's going on in our brains chemically or physically. But our minds are independent of that. I mean, we have whole process, the whole world, I think of as a mental world, just like a separate from the physical world, that we belong to both. And in the case of gender is in the mind, whereas sex is physical. Sex can be a verb, a physical activity, or it can be identification as, genetic identification. But the mind can do a lot of things, take a lot of positions that may be consistent with the physical world or not. You know, the mind is an independent entity, and it could have views of the world and views of a person's self, that are free to vary. That, you know, we have free will. That's what that means in our case of human beings. So, with the free will, a man could have the will to think that he should have been a woman, but that's all in his mind. It's not in his genes. The reason we know it's not in his genes is that 25% of all people, one of whom is of all identical twins, one of whom is gay. Of all identical twins, one of whom is gay, 25% are not. So it's not in the genes. Mm. That's the evidence so far. Anyway. So it's all in the mind.
And he's got a chapter in much more detail in his book, Chairman Biden, Dr. Fauci's Monster. Dr. Fauci is chapter 3 in the book, in the title as well. What did Dr. Fauci do wrong? What do you hold him responsible for?
Well, in the first place, he's responsible for the virus because he was the one who supported, who financially supported the research going on in that Chinese laboratory where it occurred. He knew it was dangerous research. A few years earlier, the department, the government cut off funds for that kind of research, and he resumed them. And so he's responsible for that. That laboratory was known for being rather careless with cleanliness. And so somebody caught the virus, two people caught the virus there, and passed it on to the rest of the world. So he's responsible for that virus. It was a manufactured virus. Wasn't natural. The man wasn't bitten by a bat who had it. And although he did try to purvey that view as what had happened to hide his complicity in it. And then when Biden won, Biden used him extensively as a guide for the policy on the virus, and he was telling us about standing 6 feet apart and wearing masks, and we did all those things, and the president made them his suggestions, mandatory, and the government acted like a dictatorship with respect to the virus, kept businesses closed, restaurants closed, beauty parlors, hair. Barber shops closed, and if you had the virus, they made you take the vaccine anyway, even though you had tested positive and had the virus, and it very likely weren't going to get it again. He had people fired from the army who refused to take it, the vaccine. People lost their jobs who refused to take the vaccine, government jobs. That was all the virus, and the worst thing was his children could go to school, although the evidence was clear, except for what the government was saying. But from research, from laboratories like Johns Hopkins, other places, children were immune to the virus unless they had a comorbidity, like obesity or something like that.
Yes.
And so they were left out of school. The younger teachers who weren't very old, were like everybody else. They had strong immune system. And my wife and I was, I'm 95 now. My wife was 86. Now we didn't even test positive ever. You're healthy, even if you're old, you didn't get it. Or if you got it, you just have light symptoms, and we didn't even get it.
Yeah.
I thought the virus wasn't so much of the problem as the government just magnified the problem. The government was the major problem of the virus, the handling by the government. And Fauci was a good deal responsible for the government's handling of it.
Well, you touched on and President Biden at in that answer. And that's the title of the book, Chairman Biden, Chairman, not President Biden. Talk about that and why you call him Chairman as opposed to calling him President.
Because I thought of that from the very beginning, and I think more people would believe it now after his term of office turned out what he actually was. He didn't run the government. He was unable to run the government. What I thought had happened is that he made a deal with Bernie Sanders. You help me get elected, and I'll carry out your platform. As a sociopath, I saw him as a sociopath, just as I did Hillary. And, he lied directly to our face. Even when we knew he was lying, it didn't bother him. He's mostly concerned with himself and his family. And he made a ton of money by using his position in politics, because he certainly wasn't rich when he became a politician. And he went from train riding to jet flying, all on government salary, is hard to believe. And so anyway, I just thought that when he became president, he was senile. I saw him as senile, and I thought he could not run the government. He just made that deal with Bernie Sanders, and he was going to carry out Bernie Sanders' agenda. Being a sociopath, it didn't matter what agenda it was. He just wanted to be president, and he was president, and he did carry out that agenda. But he didn't do it personally. He at the most he conducted a meeting of people who were really making the decisions, and his wife was one of them. And his wife was probably the vehicle that got him to approve with the auto pen. approved many of the decisions that supposedly came out of the president's office. They came out of the office, but not out of his head.
Our guest on the program is Ronald Alfred Weitzman, W-I-T-Z-M-A-N. His website is raweitzman.net. The book is Chairman Biden and Dr. Fauci's Monster. He goes through seven essays and taking on some of the topics that we talked about today and, of course, several more. As time permits, we'll talk about a couple of more here on the interview today. Why do you believe the 2020 election was not free and fair? What's your stand on that?
I do want to talk about that, but I also want to talk about abortion.
Okay,
we'll talk about that first. This is important. When Mike Pence became vice president, he took an oath to defend the Constitution. When the president asked him, when he presented the vote count before the joint session of Congress, to ask each presenter if the state had determined its members of the Electoral College in the manner directed by the as the Constitution prescribed, which was the method of appointing the electors was to be determined by the state legislatures. That did not happen in four states. And we know what the states were because 17 other states sued them. They were the states that did not comply with the Constitution were Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. And we all knew that. But when the 17 states brought the issue to the Supreme Court dismissed their case because it said they lacked standing. So all Trump wanted Mike Pence to do was to ask each presenter of the comp. Of each state presenter of the count, electoral vote count, if the electors in that state were appointed in the manner directed by the Constitution, which meant the legislator had to direct the way they were appointed. Those, if they were told the truth, if Mike Pence had asked them to swear under oath that the count they were given were of electors determined by the and the electors are determined according to the Constitution, they'd have to say they weren't, in which case Mike Pence could not count their votes. Neither candidate would have had over half the votes. In that case, the Constitution requires the House of Representatives to choose the president, with each state having a single vote. And since Republican states outnumber Democrat states, Trump would have won.
That all unfolds as Dr. Weitzman talks about. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If the Supreme Court had supported the assertion,
yes,
that the states did not comply with the Constitution and appointed the electors, and they didn't.
The book is available wherever books are sold, and you'll find information at Dr. Weitzman's website, which is raweitzman, W-E-I-T-Z-M-A-N.net. Let's go back. You wanted to talk about abortion. That's prominent in the book. It's chapter two in the book. Tell me a little bit about that and what you feel the issue is.
Well, the Supreme Court made its decision in overturning Roe v. Wade, based on the 10th Amendment, which says that a power that the Constitution doesn't delegate to the Congress is relegated to the states or the people unless there's something in the Constitution that prevents is relegated to the states or the people unless there's something in the Constitution that keeps that prevents the states from having that from exercising the power. And there is something in the Constitution. I don't know how the Supreme Court admitted it. Maybe it hadn't presented as part of the case they were considering. But anyway, in the Constitution, the First Amendment, the very first part of the First Amendment said Congress shall not regulate religion. And the Supremacy Clause says if Congress can't do it, neither can any state. So, not only can Congress not regulate abortion, because the Constitution is an authorized it, but neither can any state because the Constitution actually prohibits it. And why is abortion a matter of religion that that Congress can't regulate or any state? And that's because the three major monotheistic religions of the United States have very different views on abortion. Where Catholics, a fetus becomes a human being at birth. Life begins at birth. For Protestants, sometimes between birth and conception. But for Jews, a fetus does not become a human being, does not become ensouled, as they say in the religion, until he takes or she takes its first breath. So the child is, for according to the Jewish religion, is not a child who takes his first breath. Before that, he's a fetus, is a property of his mother, as part of his mother's body. So the Congress has no right to, authority has no right to regulate abortion, and neither does any state of Congress has no right, because states cannot do what Congress cannot do.
The time has gone by so quickly. We just touched the surface on the seven essays written by Ronald Alfred Weitzman. I want to take a minute or so here at the end. What's your reflection on where we are as a country? The division we have, the pitting people against each other. You've seen a lot in decades, you know, 9.5 decades here. You've seen changes in administration. You've seen political views. You've seen debates. What are your thoughts on today? Have we gone too far with this division? Can we ever go back to being unified?
Well, only if the Democrats will accept competition. Of course, you know, since Darwin, we've known that species survive, and we could say that societies survive only if they allow competition, to allow people to compete with each other, so that only, you know, that the people who thrive are the people who adapt to their environment better than the other people. So, or animals, I'm just talking about people now. And the Republicans believe in competition, and Democrats don't. Democrats want an authoritarian government now. They want complete control. They want to pack the House of Representatives, get two more Democratic states in the Union, so we'll have one-party rule. And what the Democrats keep on saying, that dictatorship's on the right, when it's on the left. In the past 100 years, the dictators have all been on the left. Mao and going backwards, Castro, Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, they're all on the left. National Socialist Party, Hitler is on the left, just as they all were. And you can be a dictatorial on the right only if you in the sense that you're a religious government like Iran, a theocracy. Yep. So that's the danger on the right. But most in the last 100 years, except for Iran, the dictatorships have all been on the left. And that's the way the Democratic Party was sliding, using socialism in Europe as its model. And it's going further. It was going without any breaks now. That's my big fear. And the big thing is it won't allow competition. It doesn't trust people. It believes that Marxism, it's adopted that view. There are only two classes of people, cheaters and cheated. And the role of governments to equalize it, because they believe that the only way to get ahead is by cheating. And that's what they've been doing. They've been testing limits like a small child and getting away with it to a large extent.
This book... You know,
the books like Rules for Radicals are kind of like... Our rules for adults to behave like children and get away with it. They're testing limits. That's what killed these two people. They went beyond their limits. One carried a gun, and the other was using an automobile as a weapon. And so, you know, they're just testing limits. They're going way beyond ordinary First Amendment rights.
The book is certainly thought-provoking, and that was the intent, to get people to look at these topics in a different way, to have an open mind, and to go back and to look and to research. The book is Chairman Biden and Dr. Fauci's Monster. It's available wherever books are sold. The author is Ronald Alfred Weitzman, W-E-I-T-Z-M-A-N. His website is raweitzman.net. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Doctor, the time went by quickly. Thank you for being with us on the program today. And you're getting people talking, and that's always a good thing when people talk. Thank you.
I hope I'm getting them thinking.
Talking and thinking, yes. And maybe thinking before they talk. Maybe
there's a lot of talk without thought.
Yeah, that's right. I had the sequence wrong there. Let's think and then talk. That's a problem. We talk and then we think about it later. So, yes, let's get that one right. Dr. Weitzman, thank you for being with us on the program. My thanks to EC Publishing, LLC, bringing your vision to life with expert editing, design, and marketing tools tailored to your publishing success. You're listening to This Week in America. Check us out on YouTube. TWIA-TV is where you'll find us on YouTube. While there, watch, enjoy, and subscribe.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.